Hello, I'm Jonathan, and welcome to the Head Teacher Chat podcast, where we aim to keep you informed with all the latest developments in the world of education. And on this episode, we discuss online safety and in particular, data-driven harms with Dr. Rachel O'Connell from Trust Elevate. Good morning, Rachel.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here, Jonathan.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in Trust Elevate?
I will indeed. So Trust Elevate is a child age verification and parental consent service. What that means is that we enable platforms and apps that kids use, like TikTok and also EdTech apps, to know the age bands of their users. And for very young users, we verify when somebody says, I'm the parent of this child, so that that parent can grant, deny, or revoke access to data processing or access to the app itself over time. So we're enabling businesses to comply with the regulation that requires them to have age checks and for young kids do parental consent. And my background is really the driver behind this for me is my PhD was analyzing paedophile activity on the internet way back in the middle to late 90s. So I understood how paedophiles were using the internet to get access to kids. And then in 2000, I moved to the UK from Ireland and set up the first UK Internet Safety Centre because I really wanted to develop programmes of education to educate kids and young people and those responsible for their care. So head teachers, safeguarding professionals about the internet and how to equip them with the kind of tools and knowledge and skills to keep kids safe online. So I did that for a few years and then worked within industry. Bebo, a social networking site. So I saw firsthand, Jonathan, the nature of the issues that kids are having to deal with. It's like pro-anorexia content, so promoting, right, dieting and severe dieting and bulimia, how to binge and how to purge after binging, self-harm, pro-suicide thoughts. And it was really incredible to think about the range of risks to and harms to children's well-being, as well as grooming, paedophile activity. So for the last decade, I've been working in the space of how do we conduct an identity attribute check? How can we verify that somebody who says I'm a parent, how do we verify when somebody says I'm over 18 or under 18? How can you do that in a privacy-preserving way? So I was recruited by the British Standards Institution to write a technical standard about how you would do that. And I got to work with some of the most amazing security and privacy identity experts around the world to develop the PAS 1 to 96 age-checking code of practice, which is now in the process of becoming a global standard. So we've built Trust Elevate in line with those global identity standards. And we've run technical trials that were funded by the UK government under the Verification of Children Online program of work. So it's a really exciting tipping point where you're seeing and even hearing on the radio and seeing in the newspapers, there's this focus on age verification because we're understanding that to create an age-appropriate environment for kids online, you need to know the ages of users.
It's very important these days that actually you have that age verification. And so for schools, what do they need to know about this age verification app then?
Oh, this is really critical. We're running some trials with schools. We've about 16 schools in the first set of large-scale trials and altogether about 143. So we're recruiting schools to run these technical trials, large technical trials. And we're getting to understand, we're working with EdTech providers to understand their requirements and also device manufacturers so that we can enable schools, because every head teacher is worried about how can I ensure that the EdTech platforms I'm using comply with the ICO age-appropriate design code, right? That's a worry. And then how can I ensure that they're complying with the requirements of the Data Protection Act 2018, the UK Data Protection Act? Because the legal underpinnings for processing kids' data, as the Department for Education told you, is vital interest. The government has a requirement, is legally obliged to make sure every child is educated, and therefore their data is gathered and stored for specific purposes. But when you get into EdTech, and particularly a blended education, these third-party EdTech providers will be maybe processing data and making that data available to other companies, which a head teacher must know that that's one of the primary questions you should ask an EdTech provider to make sure that children's data, which is given special protections under data protection law, isn't being made accessible to other companies, such as Facebook, Google, and others, for purposes that the school doesn't know about, and certainly the parent doesn't know about. So these are the kind of concerns, but with Trust Elevate, we can help address all of those concerns.
And so how does that happen with Trust Elevate? What are the stages when you have a EdTech company come on into your school system? How does Trust Elevate then do that age verification for children?
So on our, the management information system, schools can activate the Trust Elevate tile.
Okay.
Right? And then that enables those EdTech platforms, once they're aware, to work with us, and we can enable the compliance across the total school data ecosystem.
So what about teenagers? How does the data-driven harm affect teenagers?
So the really worrying thing about this is that there are companies out there that when a teenager or a young person is a candidate for an apprenticeship or a job or a place in university, these companies are like, we'll give you a profile of this individual based on their activities on social media platforms, right? So you have a situation where a decision about your future is made based on the data generated whilst you were on social media apps, gaming platforms, and just generally scouting around the internet. Now, in most cases, people just don't know that the decision has been informed by that kind of data. So they're the kind of, when we say data rights or human rights, yeah, no decision and no discrimination should be made against you. You have no recourse. You don't know that it's been done. You've no way to challenge it. And what if somebody set up a fake social media account and there was bullying, etc.? So you get a really horrible score. So I think from young people, the kind of date, there's concerns about safety to their well-being and eating disorders, the stuff that we mentioned earlier, but also it's, this could negatively impact your life chances going forward. So that's why we need young people to be more informed about these data-driven harms to their opportunities and the risks that they're exposed to as a result of this data crunching. And I think it's incumbent upon us as a society to raise that awareness and then hold those companies to account and say, this is not fair to have artificial intelligence scanning your social media and all of your activities to come up with some risk scores for your candidacy that could be instrumental in deciding whether or not you get an apprenticeship, a job, or a place in university.
That's incredible that is happening nowadays. And actually, some of the children, they're still children, some of the that they're doing it to, because ones are going to university are going to be 16, 17 when they start applying and things like that. So, yeah, incredible.
It's incredible. So it's for the 12s and others, there's a focus on the safety side of things. And then when you get into your teens, when you're experimenting, and the data protection regulation affords teenagers the protection. There's a right to erasure, right? There are special protections afforded to young people, but in the absence of any knowledge about how to exercise those rights, those data rights, then young people are vulnerable to the misuse of their data and not having any recourse, any way to say, hey, hang on a second, how did you reach that decision? Was that informed in any way, shape, or form through the analysis of my social media activity, et cetera? And if so, can you tell me? Because I'd like to know, right?
Sorry. No, I didn't know that was happening. And so I didn't know AI was being used to actually profile teenagers for apprenticeship or going on to university. That's quite surprising.
So the apps are doing it, and then other apps or other companies are saying, hey, we're going to take that information and present it and they see it, they package it as a service, right? So they create a psychographic profile, they do sentiment analysis on what you've expressed in a tweet, in tweets or on TikTok, your followers, etc. And then they compute a score, which the employer may say, okay, I don't understand where this score has come from, but it indicates that this may not be a good candidate. So I'm just going to put that one aside and go with one that got a good score.
Over the 25 years of in internet safety, what are the major changes you've seen from the school perspective?
There have been massive changes because initially we referred to the internet as kind of the information superhighway. BECTA and other agencies around this were looking at how do we consider children's safety, but we saw it as separate from their real lives. What's happened in that intervening period is that the platforms have been far more sophisticated in using the data that they can gather about kids and young people, it's also about adults, by tracking them right across the internet, on the apps, on their devices, so that they can create psychographic profiles of kids in terms of what their psychology is, what their interests are, when is the time that they spend online, the activities, interests, etc. They can have up to 8,000 data points about your child, right? That's quite scary when you think about it. 8,000 data points. And then they leverage those data points to say, oh, this kid seems to have body issues and they're interested in dieting. So let's keep surfacing. So these are algorithms, right? So let's keep surfacing content, because it's what drives these companies. It's what's called the attention economy. The longer your eyeballs are on the screen, the more ads you can see, the more money that they make, right? So that's the business model that underpins the attention economy. But what that means is that those algorithms are surfacing content, and it doesn't matter whether there's no distinction between positive or negative harmful content. It just surfaces, right? So you have extremism, you have dieting, extreme eating disorder, body dysmorphia that is created as a result of these data-driven harms, right? That's been a huge change. We used to think of pedophiles on the internet and then grooming kids. That's still going on. But now the algorithms say, oh, you're an adult male that seems to be interested in 10 to 11-year-olds. So we will put in your feed 10 to 11-year-olds that are vulnerable, right? Yep. That completely changes the dynamics of the risk and harm to young people. And I think once people start to think that through, there should be a reaction against that. And there are provisions within the Data Protection Act that say that companies shouldn't profile kids under a certain age. They deserve special protections. Yeah. So that's the massive change that is happening. And what we're seeing is that there's a normalization. So then companies are, in addition to the data-driven harms, they're saying, right, there's behavior modification techniques that we can use that nudge you, right, that nudge you to do specific things. So they're using those behavior modification techniques in ways that have a massive impact on behaviors. For example, if you go on to live streaming sites that are very popular and late at night, you will see 8, 10, 12-year-old girls, you know, doing the dancing. So they're live streaming, and you can hear the voices of adult males saying things like, lick your lips, bend over, spread your legs. So we have seen a massive spike in what is called, which is a terrible name for this, self-generated child sexual abuse material. Because it's not self-generated, it is coercively, is it like a coercive control element? And because young kids want, they dream of being like big content creators, TikTok creators online, right? That's their dream. They'll be famous, they'll be a celebrity, but to be famous, you have to attain a certain number of viewers. You have to have a certain high number of audience. So, and also people can give you virtual coins and love hearts and stuff, which once you're a content creator, you can convert into actual real money. So this is the dream that kids have. Now, the ways that adult strangers manipulate kids is that they talk to each other in the background. So one of them will say, hey, do a certain thing, like spread your legs, whatever. If the child doesn't do it, they drop off in massive numbers. So the kid sees, oh, there's a massive drop off. I better do what they say. So they make a split second decision, right? And then there's this normalization that this is okay to do this. Now, the Internet Watch Foundation, which handles reports of child sexual abuse, has seen a massive spike during COVID because all of the guys are at home, the kids are at home. So I think what we're seeing, what is new, is the extent to which these data-driven mechanics of these platforms and apps have exacerbated the risks to which children are exposed. And essentially, Jonathan, data rights are human rights. Data rights are human rights, right? It's like your human rights, your lungs. You can't sell your organs. You know what I mean? So this is a company that's profiting from these accounts. So that's the kind of surveillance that's happening online that can have a negative impact on children and young people, and us as adults too, to be fair.
Well, I think adults probably understand it a lot better than children, obviously, because they're using it on a day-to-day basis, but it is normalized. Mm-hmm. What's actually and how those bits of information are being used, and we got to get to educate the children to make sure that they understand how these data points work and actually protect them as much as we can. So how can schools help then? I mean, what can schools do? Because do you know, I'm just thinking, how many people and how many schools do actually know that this about data harms?
I think there's a massive piece of work to do in terms of educating schools, safeguarding professionals, data ethicists. And there is a big pushback against companies. And some companies are beginning to take this seriously and realizing that there needs to be a more equitable social contract between them and the end users.
Yeah.
Right? And the data protection regulation requires that. It comes from Convention 108, which is about human rights. That is the core of the Data Protection Act. You also have the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, which says that companies such as YouTube and others who are serving content need to age rate it, first of all, and then age gate it. So we've got a wealth of regulations and the Age Appropriate Design Code. So the laws are in place. We now need the regulators to enact those laws, and we need industry to take the safety tech sector. This is an emerging tech sector of which Trust Elevate is part. Our business is to make the internet a safer space for children and young people. And I think this is incumbent upon us then to educate young people about what their rights are, basically, their data rights.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful gentleman, Duncan McCann, who's taking a class action against YouTube on behalf of all UK parents of kids below the age of 13, basically saying, YouTube, I never gave you permission to process my child's data as required by law. So we're seeing a growing kind of activism amongst end users in relation to holding companies to account.
So what can schools do then?
So schools can contact info@trustelevate.com. We're actively recruiting schools right now to participate in these trials. It takes about 5 minutes to go through the trials. And we also offer internet safety education, just like I've done with you today, more in-depth, and also that program of it, so that we're empowering and enabling young people to understand the dynamics of what's happening and to take actions, and also working with companies that are helping children to understand how to code. So essentially, my call out to head teachers is contact info@trustelevate.com or me directly, rachel@trustelevate.com, and we can include you in the trials and the work that we're doing going forward. We're part of a umbrella organization, trusttears.org, trust tiers, like as in levels, which is bringing together organizations like Internet Matters, iAvengers, and the Association of Internet Safety Educators with data ethicists, etc. So we're creating this movement towards with our mission, which is to create a safer internet for children and young people. And we're working with head teachers very, very closely with the parent teachers associations to educate and empower people.
I know you would agree that this episode of Head Teacher Chat podcast has been very informative. Many thanks to Dr. Rachel O'Connell for her time today, and we hope that this information will help you keep children safe. Our next episode will be available to download next week when we talk to Doodle Learning about how you can boost children's independence and resilience. Join us then. Don't forget to like, share, and follow and spread the word of Head Teacher Chat. Thank you for listening.